for July 17th, 2006. It's the Lullabot Podcast.
Lullabot Podcast.
Episode, what episode? 18 podcast episodes. We are, what can you do when you're 18? Smoke? Buy cigarettes? Can you buy cigarettes? Is that 16? I don't remember.
18.
What can we do?
Well,
we're now 18
well,
Lullabot podcasts.
We should totally be kicked out of cyberspace by now.
What?
Did we, 18, the 18? We're rebellious, you know, we're against the man.
And,
I don't know, we might be the man now.
Cyber probation school.
Yeah.
Well, it's the Lullabot Podcast. If for some reason you clicked on this and don't know why you're here, we're talking about Drupal. If you don't know what Drupal is...
Stick around.
It's powering the Twit site.
Yeah, we're just going to keep talking about it, and you'll probably not understand. We have earlier podcasts. We have some early podcasts that explain what Drupal is and the whole glossary of Drupal stuff. Go back and listen to podcasts 2 and 3 and 1, maybe. What did we do on podcast 1? I think it was just...
definitions?
Testing out microphones and... It was the first podcast was just one checking sibilance. Is this on? 1 2 1 2. But we get together every week and do the Drupal podcast with the Lullabot team, including myself, Jeff Robbins, and
Matt Westgate,
and also
Ted Serbinski
and
Angie Byron. What?
We need to come up with a new shtick. It's good.
We'll make pseudo names for ourselves.
Yeah. It's been a busy week in Drupal land. The Lando Drupal. Exciting things happening. We launched the Twit site, twit.tv. Got dug all over the place. Exciting stuff. And
yeah.
I don't know. What else? We the big things, big changes in Drupal. Let's one of these days I'm going to write down the things to do in the podcast. It's kind of haphazard, ad hoc,
yeah.
Ad hoc podcast. This podcast, this very podcast that you're listening to right now, we're going to talk with Leo Laporte from Twit and from the screensavers on Tech TV and. He's got a show now called Call for Help, and he's, he's a guy. He's been around. He's done stuff, and we're going to talk with him about the new Twit site and Drupal and how he likes it and all that and stuff like that. But let's talk about some Drupal news. What's going on, guys? And can I say guys? That's generalized.
Sure. We're,
even though we have the female presence on the podcast now. I'll have to use the Southern United States y'all.
Or folks.
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 What do you folks think about all this? We got an installer, right? Somebody
do.
Tell me, what does it do? Why does it do it?
The installer is very cool. Basically, what it allows you to do is instead of having to go muck around in the command line and do your MySQL and your Vim and your whatnots, you just unzip the files to a folder, open it up in your web browser, go to the index page, and it'll tell you, I don't know what you're talking about. Go to the installation page. You do that, and then you fill out a form, and then boom, it's installed. So it imports all the database tables for you. It makes it really quick and easy to just set it up for anybody, really. So there
and
you go.
The cool thing is now when you install Drupal, instead of getting every single table that you probably never ever use, now you only get the trim down like 30-something tables that you actually need.
Right, because now also when you enable modules for the first time, they install their database stuff, right?
Yeah,
right.
And that was new in 4.7, and now...
And that's also now in core. I mean, it was in 4.7, it was sort of external modules that did it. But now in 4.8, is it 4.8?
Or maybe it's 5.0.
We don't know. We're starting rumors.
We can talk about that later.
The Drupal core stuff also. So, for instance, if you never use book module, then any tables that the book module might install won't get installed when you install the core Drupal for the first time. And when you do install book module, it'll kick those into effect, right?
Yeah.
Correct.
And the other cool thing is there's now a concept called install profiles. And basically what this allows is different distributions of Drupal. So you can have your normal distribution, which just sets up the basic whatever certain modules. But now you can have like specific distributions. So you can have a podcasting distribution, which automatically includes like the audio module, the playlist module, maybe a couple other little modules that you need. And so when you install Drupal with that, it'll install those modules and configure them for you, so you don't have to do them yourself. So that's really cool. And it's going to open up the doors to all kinds of awesome downloads.
So how does that work, though? So it means that people will download a different distribution of Drupal that includes these? Because so Drupal comes with core modules that include, I don't know, some of the basic modules that are there. And then there's all the modules, the contribution repository full of a bazillion modules that you can add. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, in your example, audio module is not something that comes with core Drupal. So how would it work to do this podcast distribution? I mean, you'd need to...
It's not going to be... The problem with distributions is the difference with distributions is now these are going to be... They're going to be run by separate people. So it's kind of like how Linux works. There's all kinds of distributions. Some are run by big companies. Some are run by, like, Joe and his little laptop being down by the river. So now, for instance, I mean, here at Lullabot, we've talked about, like, a podcast distribution. Like, Leo's talked about it. If we had, say, a podcast distribution, we'd have to, it'd live on the Lullabot site, and we'd basically kind of manage it ourselves.
Oh, I see. Okay. And so basically we zip it up and,
right.
And put it
in. But it would make it so when they download it, we've had it, our configuration set up, so it automatically install these modules for the person and set up a couple other cool things.
So we don't have to sort of kludge together an installer solution to give them the pre-configured.
We wouldn't hack anything together. We'd actually use Drupal itself to build the profile distribution.
Yep.
Cool.
The other nice thing that install profiles let you do is they let you you can kind of manipulate the .install hook system by, you know how every time you install a Drupal site, there's like, you know, two dozen things that you have to do on every single site. Like, you know, one example I always do is take forum posts from automatically promoting to the front page because I want them in the forum.
Right.
Stuff like, you know, maybe comment settings or something like that.
An article about comment settings up on the Lullabot site.
Yes.
It's exciting. Yes. It's an exciting article all about comment configuration.
And how much it could use some love.
It's not very exciting, but it is an interesting study.
Comments, yes! Anyway, but yeah, so all those little stupid things that you end up doing for every single site, what you can do is and enabling blocks and just little things that you do, you know, without even thinking of it, but that add up when you're sitting there clicking on stuff. All you do is you make your own custom module for the, you know, distribution or for the site that you want to deploy this on. And in the install file, you would add in whatever database queries or variable set statements or that kind of stuff that you need in order to set that up so that the instant that someone goes to install this distribution, when it runs the install module for your custom the install hook for your custom module, it, bang, does all the database changes for you, and you don't need to worry about that anymore.
Wow, awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah. There is right now a little tiny bug with that, but there's a patch in the queue for it. It might actually be committed by the time you hear this. But,
I want to do that. That sounds like so cool. Because basically, you combine that with the theme and, you know, pre-configuring it to enable that theme, and oh, man. You could, like, distribute, like a good-looking version of Drupal.
Yes, you could.
Yeah, upon setup, you're like, I want a two column.
I want to do like a super sexy distribution. Like, I don't know. just
the SS,
all
Drupal SS.
All the like Drupal XS, the exactly that I like that other people don't like. I you know just all the Ajaxed out and bells and whistles and Flash and all the stuff that just makes all kinds of developers like skin.
And it doesn't do anything.
Just like, no, it's like it's totally impossible to use, and you have to like install 18 different plugins to actually get that to my site. And it's, oh, it's gonna be so
and it has to download the internet to run, basically.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, I started that out seriously, and I don't know where it went. But. Any other news? What do we got? There's the continuing production in the jQuery. Ajax library coming into.
I just heard about this a little bit before we got on the podcast. It's jQuery. John Riesig, the creator of jQuery, he actually says he's going to release jQuery as GPL, which is fantastic for Drupal because if you didn't already know this, Drupal is going to actually include hopefully jQuery with the next release, and having jQuery as GPL that's compatible with Drupal GPL. And everyone's happy.
GPL, the
public license.
General public license from the GNU people or something. It basically is the license under which Drupal is released, meaning sort of defining exactly what open source means and how it can be used and what you can resell and what you can't resell and how you can charge for it and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And basically currently the entire Drupal repository, the entire Drupal CVS repository, everything in there has to be GPL. Basically by putting it into the repository, it becomes GPL'd, which means that if something is already released under another license, for instance, the MIT license, which jQuery was, historically, and also, a lot of other things are under MIT license, for instance, the, Scriptaculous and prototype stuff is all MIT license. That stuff can't be in the Drupal repository, which means that when you download modules that use that stuff, usually they'll give you some sort of a warning that pops up on the screen saying, hey, you need to download this and put it in the module directory for me.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that. So anyways, that's great news. It's great to see things moving in that direction. I think we're going to see some really some stuff that designers will get excited about with Drupal in the next release.
Ted, did you want to just touch on what jQuery actually is for people who haven't been following the whole thing?
So jQuery is, in a nutshell, it's a JavaScript library. And everyone's like, another JavaScript library. So there's tons of them out there. There's the prototype library, which is really comprehensive, but the problem is it's huge. It's like 80K or something to download. And so what happened in 4.7 was Steven's like, well, we need JavaScript, but we don't want to, 100K, that's ridiculous. So he kind of wrote the Drupal JS file based on it, and it has a lot of useful functions, but it's, the problem is there's, most of the Drupal developers are just PHP, they could care less about JavaScript, and the JavaScript one is so, I guess, custom. It doesn't really, it's hard to maintain. And so when jQuery was discovered, it's a super lightweight JavaScript library. It's only 10K. It's actually smaller than the Drupal.js, and it's way more powerful, way more easier to use, and it has its own community that's kind of keeping track of it and adding improvements. And so what this means is if it goes into Drupal, there'll be this fantastic JavaScript library that anyone can make use of. There's a whole community with extra plugins to download specific to jQuery. And you can add all kinds of cool effects to your site. You can make it Ajaxified. You can have little things pop up and hide and move around and who knows what. Really easy. And the jQuery syntax is super simple. It's like you just say, like, my class dot show open fly around. And it'll do something.
I'm guessing it'll fly around.
Yeah, but slowly. It'll fly around slowly as it opens up. As a butterfly opens its wings and flies around.
That's
what jQuery is in a nutshell.
Cool. Well, right on. Well, let's move on to this interview with Leo Laporte and talk about the TwitSite. that just launched a few days ago. It got, as I mentioned, it got, was like the top story on Dig.
Yeah, for July 13th.
It was like launched Drupal site, launched with like, we kind of, I think the beta for that site was what, like a couple of hours or something. It was like, how's it look? Good, great, let's launch it. Okay.
The beta was instantaneous. It was like, let's go live now. Okay. And, it's live. Crap. Oh, wait. It's good. It's nothing caught on fire. Nothing.
And and then it got dug and it got a bazillion hits and held up like a charm. Fabulous. Fabulous stuff. So let's talk to Leo and find out more about all that. So we've got Leo Laporte on the podcast this week. That's exciting.
Hey, I'm a Lullabot fan.
He's a man with his own podcast, and he's on our podcast.
Or two. I have one or two.
Yeah.
Yeah, a couple.
A lot of podcasts. How many podcasts?
I don't know. I'm not sure exactly. Seven, something like that.
Wow. And you have a new website, so I understand.
I hear that. I've heard that. You know,
according to Dig.
Was the number one story on Dig for the first day. Ah. It's really remarkable because I doubt any of your clients do it anything like what we did, which is basically just say, okay, it's done. let's put it out. And poor Ted, I mean, but you know, to his credit, squashed all the bugs right away. The nice thing about doing it like that is a lot of people see it. But I mean, to have the first, you know, trial of the website with more than one or two people using it at a time to be on a day when you're the number one story on Dig all day is pretty gutsy.
How did it do?
It couldn't have done better. I mean, I brought it down around noon for about a half an hour by messing with my Apache configuration file. And it turned out that was a good thing because we were having some memory issues with the search. And Ted thought it was MySQL. And I was that's why I was going to Apache. I was actually going to modify the config files on both to optimize them. It broke Apache. I rebuilt Apache. We had rebuilt MySQL to make it a compatible version. We went to 4.1. And I guess that was there was some sort of mismatch between Apache. So when I rebuilt Apache, everything was fine. So for about half an hour, we were down while I was rebuilding Apache. But I'll tell you, at no point did I see a slowdown of the site. Drupal just scaled beautifully. The design scaled beautifully. Which surprises me because I've never seen such a large CSS file in my life.
Yeah, there's a couple of files in there.
It caches. That's
thank cool. God, because what is it, 200K, Ted? It's huge.
No, it's not 200K.
Oh, okay.
It's only just 1,200 lines.
Well, it's 1,200
lines.
It's the new web, man. It's everything in the CSS. The CSS defines the entire
design. It does.
Design.
And Ted did a really nice job, I think, optimizing the CSS, and then of course you did all the Drupal stuff.
Thank you.
But it's very efficient because the thing just pops up.
Yeah, it came out great. Let's backtrack a little bit and talk about. So obviously your new site uses Drupal 4.7, right?
You bet.
You had been using Drupal.
Are we using 4.7.2, Ted? Because I see there's a security
issue.
Yeah,
we're actually using a little bit. Even newer
good.
Than that.
Okay, good. I went to Drupal.org this morning and said, oh, yeah, there's a security problem.
Yeah, we've actually been running, for people out there, we're running the CVS version of 4.7. So updates go in every day, we just grab them. So we've been running 4.7.2 for a while, actually.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Jeff. I just wanted to make sure
I was
secure.
No, that's cool. You had been running Drupal previously,
yes.
Right? And
yeah.
4.6. And so sort of let's get the backstory on Leo Laporte and Twit and Drupal in general. How did you end up?
We talked about this a little bit when you were on our podcast, Jeff, on Inside the Net. Like you, I'm kind of a CMS junkie. You used to be a CMS
it's
junkie.
It's sort of out of necessity, I guess.
Yeah. And I had used
no
them all. You know?
No one sets out planning on being a CMS junkie.
No, but if you're doing websites with a lot of data, you want to, and I'm always updating the sites. And so I really have tried many of the big CMSs, the obvious ones, and in fact some of the commercial ones, and never really found anything that was just right. When when we decided to do Twit, Twit grew very organically. At the time, I thought it was a single podcast, and I was looking for, I'm an open source fan. I wanted something open source. I thought, you know, we can't use a commercial product with a program like Twit. And after trying a bunch, I liked Drupal. The thing I liked about Drupal right away was the number of modules, contributed modules, or really rich stuff, including a PayPal module that I needed, because we take PayPal donations. And then I just really liked how logical and solid it seemed. I loved the administrator interface. What I didn't like was the design, frankly, and I think this is the rap Drupal gets all the time, is this stock templates just are not very attractive. I used a stock template for a year with very slight modifications, and it got the job done, but it was the information architecture wasn't right. As we grew with more podcasts, it just didn't make any sense. It was basically a blog format, so the podcast would just scroll off the page, and there was no way to really go to the site and figure out, you know, oh, there's other shows. It wasn't obvious.
Right.
So I knew we had a problem, and I was kind of committed to sticking with Drupal, but I started by going to a web design firm, Amber MacArthur, who's one of my co-hosts on Call for Help, and one of the Twits has a web design firm, and so I went to them, and we were talking mostly about branding, to be honest. But her brother did a really good information architecture for the site. They came up with a look and a style and colors, and I took it home. I had the zip file with a CSS in it. I said, okay, great. Now let's just apply this to Drupal. And went, whoa. Okay. I pretty quickly realized that's not something I can do. I mean, I suppose I could have. We had, I was actually a volunteer do the porting, and it just, you know. But the thing is, it wasn't Drupal. It just didn't work very well. Mm-hmm. So I started searching for a Drupal house, and you know, I saw a site that you guys did that just blew me away, on the one of the Drupal theme sites, and so that's when I sent you an email. And I'm really, as usual, I just lucked into something that worked out pretty darn well. It was a good choice, you know. In retrospect, I probably should have done more research, etc.
We're glad that you didn't.
frankly, there aren't that many people who do Drupal.
Actually, no, there's not a whole lot of Drupal companies. Yeah. I mean, in the grand scheme of things.
Right. It's not like, you know, Plone or Zope or something where there's lots of people out there.
Right.
Or PostNuke.
There's a lot of opportunity for competition in the market right now,
yeah.
I guess.
So. Well, but the thing is, you guys really know what you're doing. And one of the things that encouraged me is you had done a similar site that had a private side to it, that had e-commerce on it. You did a really good e-commerce module. So I knew you guys knew what you were doing. And it's worked out so well. I mean, I couldn't be happier. And in fact, in many ways, you know, we really had to go back and redo a lot of the CSS to fit the Drupal architecture. And Ted turned out not only to be a great PHP programmer and Drupal designer, but a good really good CSS guy.
Thank you. Yeah,
I've never seen such clean CSS code.
One thing I've noticed with Drupal is you have to be multidisciplined to kind of understand, because Drupal it's built really well, but it's not really built well for designers. And
to be able
to program to make it fit the design, and then back and forth. And
I think that's what happened.
It's powerful that way, but it's really hard.
Well, I think that Drupal is at this point sort of really oriented architecturally towards standards compliance and web standard sites. And it's hard to build those sites, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, my wife is an O'Reilly author, and she sat down to write the new version of her book. Here, I'll plug her book, Web Design in a Nutshell, figuring, oh, well, you know, it's been a couple of years since I've done an update, you know, what's new in the web. The whole web standards thing has been a major, major sea change in the way that web pages are built and should be built, and what's sort of acceptable for building them.
Well, it's a moving target too, so it's so
and
hard
it
to
is
do.
And Drupal's oriented towards that, but for people who are kind of used to, you know, doing their design in Photoshop and just kind of slicing it up and outputting a website, it's difficult to do that. And also, I mean, obviously, theming. Drupal, the more you know about the Drupal API, the better it is, and the more that you can do. And so sometimes it's not quite as easy as it might look.
The thing that I notice is that when people visit my site now, they're surprised that it's Drupal. A lot of Drupal sites say Drupal, basically. I don't mean literally, because I do say built with Drupal at the bottom, but they look like they're Drupal.
Right.
And this looks like just a great site. You wouldn't know what's running it.
And the funny thing is, when you actually look at the code, there's only like a couple files doing like the whole site. And I think that's kind of a misconception about Drupal. Everyone's like, oh, I have a site. Why does it look like Drupal? Why can't I make it look different? And there's just some basic hurdles like, hey, turn off the blocks and do like little things like that. And it's like, oh, totally looks like a different site. You don't know it's running Drupal.
Yeah. We use the new regions feature of 4.7 though quite heavily, and I think that helps a lot. But then it doesn't look so Drupal-y. It's because the regions are more arbitrary, right?
Yeah, that was the most use we got out of that was for actually the future advertisements when they go up, and it makes it so you can kind of put things anywhere you want on the page. So you don't have to have like the blocks on the left, middle, and blocks on the right type thing. So it's very fluid in that sense.
I also was really impressed. I threw Ted a little bit of a curve the day before we were supposed to launch. We had talked about an episode guide and about how to handle the episode guide. And we went back and forth, and Archetype had proposed one thing, and we implemented it differently. And at the end, I finally said, "Well, can we do it this way?" And I think it required. Ted was very gracious about it, but I get the sense it required quite a bit of rewriting.
Not that much. It was actually a really good change in retrospect.
It really works now. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, but from a coding standpoint, it was an amazing change as well. Originally, the original episode guide was like this little function I wrote that kind of looked through it and found the previous episodes, the next ones. But it was kind of hard-coded in that sense. It wasn't too flexible. And just about 2 weeks ago before the site launched, Earl Miles' views module was updated with the ability to actually theme a view. And for those of you guys listening, a view is essentially a query builder. So I want to find all the Twit episodes. I want to find all the Inside the Net episodes. And so what I was able to do is I was like, all right, I want a view that finds all the episodes for a certain show and gives me the episode number, the date, a title, and a description. So now I have this view and it's outputting it all. And with his theme builder, I was able to actually theme it and just stick it on the right side of the page. And through kind of manipulating that a little bit, I was able to get the previous and next buttons to work. And that was actually the hardest part. Getting it to actually do the view was super easy. But the next and previous was the hardest part. And the reason that was the hardest part, we found out, was not all the episodes are numbered numerically. Some of them are like special 1 and 49A and 49B. And what happened is all the episodes were kind of out of sync. So I had like a basic formula, like all the episodes minus how many I have divided by 7 per page. But when you have episodes that aren't all numeric, it throws off the formula. And I actually had to like bust out some old school paper and pen and figure out, I was like, why isn't this matching up? And I came up with a little formula, like the magic number was like 72%. And it kind of worked. But it only worked.
Serbinsky's number. It'll become very famous in the web design.
The Ted Serbinsky theorem.
Yeah. But the only problem is it only worked in This Week in Tech. And then I realized that number had to change by a couple percentage points per show. And I was like, this doesn't make any sense at all. So I talked to Angie Bryan Webchick, and she was like, I had this similar problem. And she's like, what you want to do is load all the episodes into an array and then just kind of pick them out, the ones you want. So basically I can map episode 1 to episode 1, but episode 49A might actually be really episode 51. And I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. So I did that, and then it just worked perfect after that. So it wasn't a hack, but it was just a different way of solving the problem.
Well, but the key
and
the there
72%
is we're human, you know, we're human, and the computer needs to understand us rather than us do it the way the computer wants. And I think that's mm-hmm. that shows some elegance of design and flexibility and capabilities. It's really
certainly
important.
And now the benefit is you can name your episodes whatever
the hell I want.
And now it'll always work.
Right.
Well, let's take a little bit of a look at the site and sort of like how was it sort of put together? I mean, because as Ted sort of alluded to earlier, it's a really actually feature-wise simple Drupal site. I mean, it doesn't have a whole lot of additional add-on modules and features and stuff like that. I mean, we are using CCK, correct, Ted?
Correct.
In a couple of ways to do some things to sort of help Leo's workflow along. But other than that, it's not like, I mean, when you look in the directory of contrib modules, that we have put in there, there's not too many, right?
Yeah, it's actually, there's what we're using is, just to give everyone a quick idea, we're using CCK, which is how we kind of define all the content on the site. So there's your podcasts, which are each individual episode, and then there's like a show page. So a show page for This Week in Tech will show the latest show. And so that's all the content on the site. And then we're using the built-in blog module for all the news. We're using views module, obviously, for the episode guide. And then we're using path auto for the aliases. And oh, and so we're also using JS tools on the back end. And what we're using this for is actually the JavaScript calendar pop-up. So when Leo creates a show, he can say, I want it to be published on whenever. Any there's a little calendar so we can pick.
That's really nice because otherwise I have to enter it in some sort of computerized syntax, you know, the your date, you know, right. The Unix style date format, and so it's really nice to have something populate
month first or date first.
Yeah, exactly.
And we're also using the SpageX module for the admin menus in the background, so they can slide up and down and makes it easier to navigate. But otherwise,
SpageX.
Those are all the modules we're using.
I wrote that.
A very simple site. In terms of functionality in that sense. But most of it, so everyone's like, well, I have all those modules. How do I get it to look like this? There's two different parts. There's one, you need an awesome design, and Archetype did a fabulous job of coming up with something cool. And then the second part is, well, you have to make Drupal do that. And that's where the heart of this site comes in. It's all in the template file and all the, template files, just kind of working with Drupal and being like, all right, Drupal gives you a menu, and you're like, I don't really like that menu. I needed to have a little bit more stuff. So you got to have a couple functions override things, go back and forth, but relatively straightforward in that sense.
Did you start with existing PHP template files, or did you just kind of work through it line by line?
Oh, no, I started with fresh stuff, blank page.
That seems like the best way to do it in a case like this. Instead of trying to modify existing stuff, from scratch.
Especially when you're given some templates, per se, from a designer that are already HTML-ified like these were. That's a good way to go to start. Right. Start with
but
that
what do you do?
And then
do you,
start
do you
adding
actually,
the variables in rather than...
Do you look at a picture of the design and just kind of start typing, well, I got to have this here and this here and this here?
That's where it comes back all the way to the design side. This is totally non-Drupal now. It's like, all right, here's the design archetype has. It's like there's a column on the left, a column on the right, and one in the center. So I have to think, okay, what's the best way to kind of mark this up semantically? It's like, all right, I'll have a division on the left side, one on the right, and one in the middle, but there's a header, but it only goes across two of the columns. So the way to think about that is I really have two columns. I have the big blue column on the left, and then I have the other right side column, and then that right side column spin in the two more columns. So using that, I come up with just like an XHTML template to kind of get everything to fall into the right place, and then I use CSS to make sure it's positioned. And once I have that template kind of working like that, I go back into Drupal, and I'm like, okay, now I have these three columns. I'm like, on the left side, I take out my just filler code, and I put in Drupal, output, all the sidebar, left stuff. And then I was like, throw all the stuff in the middle, just print content, and on the right side, sidebar block. And Drupal will do that, and now it's like, okay, everything's being output in the right spot. So now I have to go back and theme all the output from Drupal. So the menus on the left on the site, that's actually a Drupal menu. And if you look through the CSS, you'll see that I've defined somewhere near the top the sidebar, like the main navigation. That's just a block with a menu, and I just used some fancy CSS to make it look like something different. And then what I do from there is just kind of go piece by piece, and it's like, okay, here's the content in the middle, which is a node, or it's a podcast node. So I have a podcast TPL file, and I change around where the HTML comes out, make sure the header is in a certain spot and the text, and then I use CSS to style it. So for the most part, this whole site is just all CSS. CSS is doing all the work.
So for fun, people can open up the page in Firefox and turn off the styles, and you still have a relatively usable page.
Right.
Actually, Firefox seems to do that spontaneously once in a while. We haven't quite figured out why.
Yeah, that's I ran into it once or twice, and then I thought someone was hacking our server. And then I thought Matt was doing something or Jeff, and I was like, what's going on?
No, it's happening on the main site, too. I'm not sure what's going on. I get occasional complaints about it.
It
seems to be Firefox only. I don't know.
And it doesn't. Not because people are caching the old site?
Well, I think it might be that. I mean, we'll see if it goes away, but I don't think it is. Yeah.
I think it's a Firefox bug, perhaps. Maybe it's like can't process all that CSS at once. I don't know.
It looks like it's just throwing out the style sheet.
Yeah, it just won't load the style sheet for some reason. Yeah.
Well, we'll keep an eye on that one.
It's one of those little, you know, intermittent bugs. It's so hard to track down because you just can't make it happen.
Yeah, and it's only happened once in the past couple of months to me, so I don't.
It's started to happen a lot to me, and I thought it was at first cookies, and of course I've cleared all my cookies, and we had some issues in any way with the Twitch site because of the way the aliases were resolving, which you suggested a good fix. I think Matt Westgate at Lullabot said we fixed that in the htaccess file. And that seems to have fixed a lot of the issues.
That's actually new in 4.7 and future versions is now in the htaccess file, you can force the site to always be www.yourdomain or you can have it just yourdomain.com. And that it's generally good to force it one way or the other, and that just fixes issues.
Yeah, and people have conflicting cookies and so forth, or it would go to www.
Right.
You know, they'd be on twit.tv, then they'd go to www.twit.tv, and suddenly they're logged out. And so, yeah, it's better just to have it be, you know, kind of a canonical name.
And lots of times your logs end up, like, dual, not recognizing that people are actually viewing the same pages. And
I'm wondering if that's the CSS problem is related to that. And anyway, we'll see if it – I have a feeling it will get better, although it happened to me last night again, and I'm not sure what that is. But, you know, it's amazing, really, given how little testing this site had, not how reliably it's worked and how well it's scaled. You know, I mean, we had several hundred thousand visitors in the first day, and it just handled it beautifully.
So what's your infrastructure? How do you have this server set up?
It's on a dedicated dual Xeon box, a gigabyte of memory, I think we have a 100 megabit pipe. So we're prepared to handle a lot of traffic. The MySQL and the Apache are stock. I haven't yet changed the conf files, and I may not. It seems like it's handling it well. I had in the past modified them quite significantly when I was having issues. It turned out the issue I was having was we were also running a PHP BitTorrent tracker on the same server, and that was just killing it. It was just killing
it. Now, what version of PHP and Apache and MySQL are you running for everyone?
Oh, I better run PHP info then.
Oh. Okay.
I think we put this on here.
We had this conversation on a conference call
and we
4 days ago, and the question
out.
Is whether Leo left that info.
I did. Are you kidding? Although now I'm going to have to delete it, aren't I? We're using MySQL 4.1.19, which I think is the latest version. We just did a rebuild on that.
Yeah, on the 4 release, it's the latest.
Yeah, PHP 4.4.2. And it seems to all be running quite well. Apache is 1.3.3.6.
Is anonymous user page caching turned on? Do you know?
Yeah. Page caching is turned on. It's defaulted to every 30 minutes to go off.
That seems to make a big difference, too. I mean, I wonder if that might be related to the Firefox issue, too. I don't know.
Maybe.
It might be. For those of you listening, that's in the administer
settings
area. There's a new, in 4.7, there's a new caching for anonymous users, and it works really well.
If you're not a registered user, you will get a cache site, but if you are a registered user, it'll rebuild it for you each time.
Right. That was in 4.6. There's some new caching options for logged in users in 4.7, but yeah, it's a...
Well, we haven't had to use throttling at all. I mean, I think that's really solved. I have used throttling in the past because we get a lot of anonymous users, but I haven't had to turn it on at all here.
Have you had throttling happen? Like, has your site ever in throttling?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
that's interesting.
I had a pretty high throttle level of 15,000 users, and it throttled all the time. In fact, people all of a sudden said, what happened to all the comments? I said, they're throttled.
Oh, wow. That's cool. Because, I mean, Drupal has that feature, but we were having a conversation when I was in San Francisco with some other Drupal developers, and they were all saying, it's nice to have that feature, but I've never actually used it.
We were using it so much that I actually had to really tweak it because a lot of the site was going away.
Huh.
I throttled a lot. I'm just some nitwit who installed Drupal, right? And so I turned on, the calendar and all that stuff. And, there's certain modules that just really, at least in the earlier versions, were real hogs. So I throttled those. And, but as it turned out, nobody ever saw those features because they were always throttled. So I just got rid of them. Someday, if you get up in the middle of the night, you'll see the site as it's supposed to look.
You're just too popular. But so,
it's nice now, though. I mean, I don't have to do any of that.
So infrastructurally, it's all one machine. You don't have separate database servers and
I mean, I have that capability, and I always thought, I own three servers. This is all through the planet, and I own three dedicated servers. Expecting that I might need at some point to do some load balancing, and they have hardware load balancing, but I haven't really needed to. It's been, in fact, I'll do a top real quickly and I'll tell you, but it's really very efficient, surprisingly efficient.
Hmm. And you got Doug. You were number one on Dig yesterday.
Yeah, all day. Yeah. And I didn't notice it. Maybe the Dig effect doesn't happen. I don't know. Maybe it doesn't happen to me. But right now, I don't know.
You were saying that people dug it, but they didn't actually link to your site.
They didn't go look to the site or whatever.
Like,
I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, all Leo's.
I'm excited about it, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah. So I'm just looking at my top right now. And, it's dual hyper-threaded Xeon, so it looks like four CPUs. And the load average on all four is less than 0.5. So it's really good. I mean, it's hardly using the server at all.
Now, do you have many users who are logging in?
I would say most. You can't post to the site, comments to the site, unless you're a login.
Uh-huh.
So I would say at least a third to half of the people on the site are logged in. I can't really tell. So I don't want to run anything that would actually check that because then I know it would kill the server.
Right.
So I'm just kind of guessing. There's incentive to log in, certainly. But you can do everything else. You can listen to the podcast. You can browse the podcast, download files, all that stuff. You just can't comment.
Right, right. And so,
I'll tell you one thing I've noticed is interesting. Is that we ask for donations, and as soon as the new site started, the donations went. We got a whole bunch of new signups, and I think that people really responded well to it. I mean, they put their money where their mouth was. I mean, the donations paid for the site redesign.
Wow.
When I was very clear about that when I announced it, the thank you, because you guys paid for this. And the response was, good, we want to give you more. You're spending the money well. So I think that's really an encouraging vote of confidence. We also had a poll, which you can see it's still on the site as we talk, of users. We've had 5,000 responses so far. 81% love it. And only 4% say go back to the old site. So I think that which is lower than
but
I thought.
Still on Netscape 4.
Yeah, well, any change, somebody's going to hate it, right? Yeah. Any change at all. And so only 4% means, as far as I'm concerned, unanimous support for the site. I mean, people really, really like it.
That's great.
And, there's some aesthetic concerns that people bring up, and I don't blame them. Some people don't like the colors or, they say it's busy or whatever. But the thing that I'm most concerned about is functionality. We really wanted to make a site where you could come to the site and find, there's a lot of shows now on this network, mm-hmm. and there's more coming. We wanted a site you could immediately say, okay, you look at the right, here are the latest episodes of all the shows. You look at the top, here's the one that just came out. I want to know more about this show, you click that. I mean, it's very, very, the functionality is, as far as I'm concerned, excellent. The information architecture designed by Archetype was very good, and the implementation in Drupal really, really works. And so if you don't like blue, who cares? I'm not worried about that. You know, but if you, but the truth is, people now can come to the site. They can listen to a podcast immediately. They can find a podcast instantly. We're going to add some other features, like the ability to search the audio of the podcasts.
Podzinger. That's amazing. I was checking that out. They've been indexing this podcast, and it's wild. You can search through the what we're saying. What we're saying right now somewhere is getting translated into text.
You could do it, yeah. but although, and we'll have to work on this, you know, we already have a text search. The Drupal search is very good, and we use that. And so I have to figure out, I don't want to lose the text search, but I want to add audio search. So I have to figure out how to accommodate that on the page. But, you know, those are minor things. I really think the functionality is for my, you know, especially for something like Twit, where it's tech people. What they look for in a site is a site they can easily, quickly navigate and get what they want. And I don't think there is aesthetics is important. Mm-hmm. I think the aesthetics are very good. I love how it looks, but the functionality is what I was looking for, and that's what we got.
Cool.
And it's instant. No delays. I mean, just really, really fast.
Now, you're using something external for forums. You're not using Drupal for your forums?
I am. And I'm actually, now that 4.7 has some pretty good forums, I'm probably going to move those in. I use Vanilla, which is an open source forums software from Lossimo. And I really like it. It's not your traditional forum software. It's very quick. Phil Terrone of Make told me about it. And I think Make was going to use this. And I looked at it, and I just was very impressed. But I think I ultimately want to get this incorporated back into Drupal. And one of the advantages we'll have of doing that is right now you have to register twice. You have to register on Drupal and you have to register on Lossimo.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I probably could figure out a way to do that because they're both MySQL and PHP, but that's not a high priority for me. So ultimately, I'd like to bring it back into Drupal. And these the forum, you know, we have an open free forum for people who are for anybody, but we also, the forum I was talking about, the Lossimo forum, is for people who've donated. And what's nice is I'll be able to do that in Drupal. I'll know if you've donated, and I'll give you access to the forum if you haven't. You won't see it if you haven't.
Cool.
That's the kind of functionality I really was looking for from the very beginning.
Right.
I'd like to have a kind of a private back-end site that you see more of. And then the other thing, and this is something that we're going to, Ted was very careful to make this possible, and then we're going to implement in phase two, is to have the workflow encapsulated. And that's something that the listeners don't know about or care about. Something I, as the guy who's got to keep this thing running, care a lot about. Right now I use a variety of different programs to post the podcast and everything. And we're going to be able to make this. It's set up to. We just have to kind of wire it now to make it so it automatically does all of that. And that will be very nice.
Yeah, because you're doing a lot of that by hand now. Right?
All done by hand.
You have to upload to one place and then create
a lot of cutting and pasting, and I'm sick of it.
Well, with a lot of podcasts, I can imagine.
Yeah, I mean, I'm putting two or three up a day now, so it's a lot.
So are you editing all these podcasts and doing all of the?
I produce them, edit them, host most of them, and post all of them.
Wow!
So yeah, we're slowly expanding. Maybe now
send donations to Leo.
Yeah, yeah. and as you mentioned, the advertising, the site was also designed to provide an appealing visual for a potential advertiser. And we do want to sell advertising banners on the site, tasteful advertising banners on the site. I don't want to ruin your beautiful work. And on the shows, we have some advertising now, and we're going to start adding more. So that was another factor is, you know, how do I create a site that advertisers would gravitate towards?
Right.
And I think we've done that here.
Mm-hmm. And the Drupal regions come in really handy.
Big time.
Yeah.
We have three
especially
regions defined.
Along with the standards based design stuff, because you can just stick stuff in and things will move out of the way. And
well, we have, for instance, we have the ads are going to come from an ad server. So what I need is a way to have an arbitrary block in a particular region that's running JavaScript code.
Right.
And there are not a whole, I mean, Drupal is just simple to do something like that. Yeah. You know, it's kind of made to do that.
Well, right on.
Thank you, guys. You did a fantastic job. I really feel like we scored here. In fact, I like it better than I thought I would. I really do. I mean, it is, in fact, you know, I had faith in both Archetype and Lulbot, but even with faith, sometimes there's some doubt sneaks in, and I just I wasn't convinced, even from day one of the design, that it would be a big, you know, how much of an improvement is going to be, an incremental improvement, revolutionary. I didn't think revolutionary. It is a revolutionary improvement. It really is. I'm already seeing increased numbers of listeners, increased donations right away. And I think that that's because it's easier to get what you want, to navigate it. You get it.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes a big difference.
I mean, I think people appreciate ease of use on sites. I mean, even if it's subliminal sometimes, a lot of
I don't think you would necessarily say, oh, wow, this is so much easier. But what happens, you go to the site and you listen, and you're within a second or two listening to a podcast, or within two clicks, you can hear any podcast on the site. That's dramatic.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it makes it really easy to... I used to look at the old site and I listened to it and I'm like, where is this episode?
Yeah.
Page one, page two. And now it's like, oh, click done.
Look, it's very fast. Much the easier. Episode guide is great. I really, I love that. I think that makes a big difference.
Yeah. I remember, go ahead, Leo.
It gives us also ways to, tease the podcasts, which is nice. I mean, before, you know, I couldn't really, promote it. You'd either listen or you wouldn't. Now, you know, on the right, you can see a one or two line thing of, you know, why you would want to listen to this podcast. And I think that makes a big difference too. People, you know, if you're browsing around the net, you don't want to waste a lot of energy trying to figure out, well, why do I watch this or why do I listen to this? So I need to be able to quickly communicate that information. And I think this site helps with that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah. What I was going to say is, before real quick, as I remember, way back when you were on Twit, you were talking about Drupal, and John C. Dvorak makes a comment. He's like, Drupal. And you're like, Leo's like, yeah, I love it. And he's like, I hate it. And then you kind of go back and forth, and I totally agree with what you guys are saying, but now it's kind of interesting to see it come full circle. Now Twit's running Drupal, and it seems to be working really well, and it's just interesting to see, like, hey, if you've tried Drupal in the past, and you're like, well, encourage you to look at it again, because it's changed a lot, and the new release, the next release coming out this fall winter, is going to do some amazing things. There's already an installer. There's going to be all kinds of great stuff built in. It's going to be really easy to use, and so it's going in the right direction.
I think John's coming around on Drupal, to be honest with you. In fact,
he
was,
that's good.
Yeah, he was doing some research on it. In fact, he told me some big site that uses Drupal, and I can't remember.
The Onion.
The Onion.
Yeah.
And he said that, and I went, what? Really? I'm stunned. I think it's really important for people who are considering Drupal to understand, those designs that Drupal comes with are by no means a good example of what Drupal's capable of.
Certainly.
And so it's good to
see. Kind of hinder it, if anything.
Yeah. So it's great to see a site like The Onion and go, oh, I can do that. Oh, okay.
Right.
I think that's a big part of what I think you guys are really doing well is taking Drupal to where it really belongs, and it needs designers. I mean, that's what it needs.
Yeah, I mean, it's that catch 22 problem. It's like, you know, how do you get more designers? You have designers, and there aren't a whole lot of designers who are sort of Drupal savvy at this point, but it's getting there. It's inching in the right direction.
It takes a little work. I mean, I think you need to attend the classes, the Lullabot classes. You need to know. I think it's true, and I think you need to know other Drupal designers. I mean, Ted, you called people and asked questions, right? I mean, you always come up against something where you go,
Right.
And certainly, the more people who are using it, the more that'll happen.
Yeah, and I think with the design thing, Drupal is very hard to design, and I'm not like a graphic designer, but I understand all the principles and like all the CSS, and I'm like, wow, this is really hard to make Drupal do this. And what I'm actually trying to do in the next release is make it easier to do like the design stuff. Like CSS should just come in easier. And right now there's the big problem where it's like the infamous Drupal.css file. It's like, oh no, Drupal, that's screwing up my site. And the problem is it's not really screwing up your site, but if you don't understand what it's doing and how to override it in your design, you're going to run into a lot of problems. So I'm hoping to basically kind of get rid of that file and put in some useful stuff in the future. But there are a lot of hurdles for designers right now, and hopefully Drupal's starting to overcome a lot of those. So we should see a lot of really cool designs soon.
Did you just delete it on my site? I think you did.
No, you're actually using the full Drupal CSS file.
I am. Oh, really?
It's there. It's currently kind of the only footprint of Drupal. If you're looking at a site, you want to see if it's a Drupal site. If you look, if you find that Drupal CSS site, that the Drupal CSS file in the source of the page, that's the
then
the
you key. Know.
Then you know.
Then you know.
Yeah, or if you go to /node2 when something pops up.
Yeah.
Hey. Okay, but when you end the podcast, I have some questions I want to ask you. So I don't want to ask them on the air, but I just have some, some questions. There's a mysterious file on my site. I'm trying to figure out what the hell it is.
Well, I'm sure that a lot of people are going to have questions about how the site was put together and sort of how it works and stuff like that. And we'll encourage people to call us up at 877-LULLABOT and ask, leave a message for the podcast. And we'd be happy to talk about how the site came together and how it works and stuff like that from a Drupal standpoint, or point you to the other people that did the other parts of it. Leo, thanks so much for coming on our podcast.
Thank you. I can't thank you enough. I mean, this just really is so gratifying. I've just been smiling for the last 48 hours. I really have. I've been glowing.
It's because all the money coming in.
it's not that much money. But it's not as much as it costs, believe me. But you tell your friends, you know, they say, oh, you seem really in a good mood. I said, yeah, my new site went up and the design is fantastic. It's really working great. And they go, oh, man, that's nice. Good. Glad you're happy. People don't get it. Only people who run websites get how cool this is.
And then they're on to the next thing. This is the other thing. I'm reading through Dig, and half the comments are like, yeah, that's good. I'd like to see an improvement on Leoville.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I can't win.
Come on.
That's all right. I do Leoville. And this is an example of a...
Let us gloat. Get some afterglow here.
Content management engine I use on Leoville is a wiki. PM wiki. So that ain't changing anytime soon. That's staying exactly the way it is.
If they want to see changes, donate more money.
Yes. Give me more.
You will see more direct donate results.
No, actually, we're doing really well, and you know, I've already decided to retain Lullabot on a consulting basis because we have phase. This was just but phase one. There's phase two, three, four, five.
Yes,
a lot more to do.
Take it into the stratosphere.
Yeah,
we're heading towards Web 3.0, baby.
Yeah, baby. Yeah. And I don't think Tim O'Reilly has a copyright on that.
No, so we got to get that
run
one
out
quick.
And get that quick.
Quick.
I think actually Michael Arrington says he's already got web3.0.com.
Yeah,
so.
I'm sure.
And 4.0 and 5.0.
All right. Well, thanks, Leo. And
thank you, guys.
We'll talk to you again in the future.
Right.
Bye-bye. Oh,